ready to move just ahead of them through the grass flats and clear anything that might cause problems for the Mors Navis and her newly recovered propulsion system. On deck, the crew was active, moving through their paces and prepping for sail. And snuggled up next to the rear of the ship, beneath the ladder they would use to board, bobbed a smaller boat with only two people seated inside it. Two women with long, glossy black braids. A new knot formed in Caledonia's throat. Maybe it would have been better to have no goodbye. As their mud runner buzzed over the surface of the water toward the little boat, Caledonia felt the unsteady peace she'd reached over Hime listing to one side. In front of her, Amina sat rigid. It was cooler in the lee of the ship. The hull was smooth in places where it had been patched or scarred for years. Even the metal they'd lost to the crusher had been newly smoothed over, the seams of the patch nearly invisible. The work was so satisfying to see that Caledonia almost asked the woman at the tiller to take them around so she could lay her eyes on all of it here in the glorious embrace of the ocean. But there were more pressing matters to attend to. Amina was on her feet before they came to a stop alongside the ship, nose to nose with Hime's boat. Hime stood while her mother sat in the back of the canoe, holding the little boat steady with a skilled oar and strong arms. No one seemed to know what to say. Amina and Hime stood locked in place, one with jaw clenched, the other with fingers curled. Red Tooth chewed on her lip, looking from the pair to Caledonia, and Caledonia waited as long as she possibly could. Red, topside. She spoke as casually as she could manage. If Amina and Hime needed a moment to say goodbye, she could give them that much. Amina, you have 5 minutes. She turned to follow Red Tooth up the ladder. A sharp clap pulled her attention back to Hime. Captain, she said, and stopped. Captain, she said again. Hime, Caledonia responded, waiting. Permission to come aboard, Captain. Hime, she said again, sadly now. Was she going to have to be cruel? There's no time. We must go. You'll have to say your goodbyes here. Her frown was delicate as a flower, petals closing as the sun slipped away. I'm not saying goodbye. Hime, please. The sadness she'd worked so hard to hold at bay was here now, sitting heavy in her chest. It was hard enough to let Hime go, and harder still to deny her a last moment among her crew. But this would be easier for everyone. It's time to let go. No! You're always making decisions for me, but this one is mine, my choice, my crew. Hime's words came furiously, toppling one over the other. I'm going with you, and I'm asking for permission to come aboard. The words finally landed. Hime wanted to stay. With them. Amina had become a statue. She faced Hime, but even without the benefit of her expression, Caledonia could feel the anxiety rolling off her in waves. Behind Hime, her mother watched. Caledonia couldn't imagine the conversation they must have had to get to this point. But her mother sat there, eyes steady and proud of the daughter she was once again losing to the water. A strange laugh fell from Caledonia's lips. Hime, of course you have my permission. Conditions, Hime said immediately, keeping her eyes resolutely away from Amina's. I am allowed to fight, and I am allowed to determine for myself when a situation will or won't be too tempting. You took care of me when I needed you. Now you have to stop. Let me be a part of this crew. They were fair demands, even if Caledonia didn't like them much. Done, she said. But I am still the captain, and when I decide we can't risk your healing hands in battle, you sit out. Deal? Hime nodded. Deal. Then welcome aboard, Hime. Chapter 31. There was nothing more glorious than standing on the deck of the Mors Navis with a friendly wind at her back. True to their word, the slaggers led them safely west on a path through the tall grasses. When it thinned enough that the Mors Navis could move on her own again, they peeled away one at a time, melting into the flat surfaced waters that had caused so much trouble for her crew and her ship. The girls were in high spirits. Not only were they finally underway, but Hime's return had brought everyone to their smiles. The minute she appeared over the railing, Red Tooth had scooped her up, spinning her around with a cheer. Tin fell into step at Caledonia's side with a report. Already she'd taken stock of their new supplies and repairs. She was nearly giddy as she reviewed the list of vitals. Grain, rice, dried meats, tea, some bag of something I don't even know what. But Far's excited about it. Caledonia smiled. How long will it last us? Oh, a good long way, according to Far. That's a direct quote. Since they might not make land again for a while yet, that suited Caledonia just fine. The queen had done more than was fair, and Caledonia intended to use these gifts well. Those sound like bright bits to me, she said. Get the crew to their stations and take us to full speed. The only thing the queen hadn't been able to give them was time. They had 6 days to cross the world and intercept the Electra. Getting through the tall grasses had taken a bite out of their first day, and Eric's bounty was surely driving ships in all directions searching for them. On their side was the tempestuous reputation of the waters ahead. They sailed unhindered for the rest of that day, and just as smoothly through the night. Caledonia had to pry herself away from the helm when it was her turn for rest, and returned as the sun rose to push her ship toward the northern horizon. Every moment brought them closer to their brothers, and she felt her pulse driving with the current. But by mid-morning, she'd smelled the distant promise of rain on the air, and not long after that, the wind turned brisk. Ahead, the skies flashed with an approaching storm. The crew came alive at once, removing loose items and stashing them below decks. The scene in the belly of the ship would be the same. Any loose item in high seas could cause injury. The girls would make sure everything was secured before the storm hit. Caledonia raced to the bridge where Tin stood ready at the helm. "Are you steady?" Caledonia asked. Tin braced her hands against the wheel, answering with forced confidence. "I'm steady, Captain." "Fill the ballast," Caledonia ordered. "Drop the keel." The Mors Navis wasn't built for rough seas. She was intended for the shallows, favoring maneuverability over heft. But she had a few tricks that might help her weather a storm like this one. A ballast chamber along the belly that would add weight when filled with seawater. And a keel that would add leverage below. With any luck, the combination of the two would keep them upright. "All hands!" Caledonia cried. "All hands to stations! Get those masts down!" 3 of the 4 masts collapsed into their chambers. The main mast remained perilously high. The waves were picking up, slapping the ship broadside. "Red?" "Captain!" Red Tooth shouted, coming close. "It won't come down. Must be a gear stuck. We can work on a manual fix, but it's going to take time." There were always hitches after a repair. Caledonia knew this, and still frustration threatened to tip toward panic. Wind pushed across the deck, ripping their time with it. If that mast didn't come down, it might tip them or break. Pisces appeared at her shoulder. "I'm going to get Orin out of the hold." Caledonia caught her arm in a tight grip. "We don't need him." "We do," Pisces pointed at the mast. "He's a ship tech, remember? He can help." A ship tech and a 5-son, she thought grimly, But Pisces was right. If he could help them get that mast down, then they needed him. Caledonia swallowed her irritation. "You help Red. I'll get him," she growled. The hallways were full of action, but no one looked twice at the captain as she continued down to level 3. The cargo bay echoed with the sounds of footsteps and the rush of water filling the ballast. She crossed to the hold and opened the door to find Orin dismantling the piles of supplies, making them smaller and lower to the ground. Through his little window, he'd glimpsed the storm and knew better than to wait for someone to come secure the room for him. "Looks like it might get rough out there," he paused in his work, hands held carefully away from his body. It occurred to her then that he might be explaining himself. He wasn't afraid of her exactly, but he regarded her with caution. "I need you topside," Caledonia looked to the porthole. Through the little pane of self-healing glass, the clouds were a gunmetal gray and rolled like waves. "We have a problem with the mainmast gear. Think you can help?" "Yes," he answered quickly, giving his bound hands over to her so she could untie him. "If you trust me to do it." The ship pitched more sharply than usual, and Caledonia gripped his hands, warm and rough and responsive. In the distance, the ship's bell began to ring. The storm was here. "I trust you not to die," she said, dropping his hands abruptly.
"It's a start."
Orin fell into step at her heels, following as she raced topside. He was easily as tall as Pisces, and had to duck frequently to avoid the low piping, but he was quick on his feet. When they arrived on deck, rain was pelting from a nearly black sky. The mast still reached upward, and now there were half a dozen girls lashing themselves to it with tools in hand. Orin eyed the mast block with a practiced gaze.
"Do you know where the gear is catching?" he asked.
"It won't come down,"
Caledonia answered without humor. Another wave knocked against the side of the ship, tipping them roughly. She was needed on the bridge. Tin had never navigated a storm and needed to change course, drive into the waves, or they'd capsize in mere moments. "Red will know more. Go, and make sure you strap in," she said, sending him off to join Red Tooth. She moved toward the bridge, then stopped, suddenly nervous. She'd sent a bullet in with her crew. She turned to find him, to ensure he was there, that he was strapping in, that he was doing exactly as he'd said he would. And he was, standing at Red Tooth's side, taking instruction while he strapped in and began moving expertly up the mast. "Five, son." The memory of his confession flashed like lightning. Orin had been a five son, and she'd trusted him with the safety of her crew. She stared after him. It was just a moment, but in that moment, another wave seized the ship, sweeping across the deck with driving force. Caledonia was knocked from her feet. She hit the deck hard, her head cracking painfully against the gritty metal. The sky was an electric blue. Her body was slipping toward white water, and the last thing she saw was Red Tooth sliding down the deck toward her like a bird of prey, blonde braids flying and a look of panic in her blue eyes. Caledonia blinked, and nothing followed. Chapter 32. Pisces was frowning, scowling, really. Half of her face was drenched in light. The other cast in shadow as though the sun perched on her shoulder. She opened her mouth to speak. Her lips moved, but the words came out muffled at first, soggy as though warming their way through water. "Pi?" Caledonia muttered, her own voice thick and muddy. Pisces bent close, and Caledonia felt a cool cloth press against her forehead.
"Easy, Cala. Then we'll get some food in you."
The edges of the room came into focus. Her room. She was in her bed, and the sun was rising on Pisces' face.
"I'm not hungry."
She sat up and regretted it instantly. The movement sent her belly and her head to spinning, and she vomited at Pisces' feet. Pisces threw a towel on the mess.
"Of course you're not, but you should be. So you'll sit there and you'll eat."
She didn't have the strength to resist, so she nodded, carefully,
and shifted so she could lean against the wall to inspect the knot on the back of her head. It was a sizable nugget, tender to the touch and crusted with blood. Pisces sent for a plate and then opened the porthole to freshen the room with brisk sea air. Do you remember what happened? The sun was fully risen now. The storm had hit around evening, which meant Caledonia had been out for the whole night. She squeezed her eyes shut and tried to remember. But all she saw was Red Tooth skidding across the deck as her own body slipped toward the edge. She hadn't been strapped in. The water should have swept her out to sea. She opened her eyes to find Pisces seated across from her, arms crossed, frowning with her entire figure.
I remember hitting the deck, and red.
But what had happened? She couldn't find it in her memory. It was obvious that Pisces knew exactly what had happened, and it was equally obvious that she wanted to say so.
You tell me.
You hesitated, her arms unfolded, hands landing on her thighs as she leaned in. I saw it. I was just in time, in fact, to see how you stopped in the middle of a storm to second-guess yourself and your crew. That's not what I was doing. Was it? She remembered the moment. The bridge crew needed her, but so did the deck crew struggling with the mainmast, a bullet in their midst. A five sun. Pisces narrowed her eyes. I know you. Maybe better than you know yourself sometimes. I saw it. You don't trust your crew, and I'm beginning to think it means you don't trust yourself. That's not what happened, Pi. It was Orin. I sent Orin off to work with Red, and then he was there and I couldn't bring myself to move away because I don't trust that bullet. What more do you want? Pisces threw her hands out in exasperation. He's done everything you asked, and he performed beautifully during that storm. If he hadn't helped get that mast down, this ship would be on the bottom of the ocean by now, and your crew would be dead.
I want... Caledonia's head throbbed. I want you to understand that no matter what he does to gain your trust, you can't give it to him.
I think he's done more than enough to gain our trust already. He's tricking you. Tricking me? How? Pisces was on her feet, pacing in front of Caledonia's bed. Tell me how I'm being tricked. You're enamored with him. Pisces couldn't have looked any more affronted. I'm not enamored, Cala. I like him. I'm grateful for him, and I treat him like he's human because that's what he is. I can do that without falling for him. Can't you?
They were interrupted by a single knock at the door. It was the plate of food, piled high and still steaming. And even though a moment before she'd have sworn she wasn't hungry, her stomach growled. She took the plate.
What happened to Red?
She nearly cut herself in half going after you like that. But she's fine. Sore. Maybe a little grumpier than usual.
Pisces filled the gaps in Caledonia's memory. The ship was pitching hard to starboard, and Caledonia was washing away with the water. But Red Tooth used the roll of the ship to her advantage, sliding down the deck just in time to catch Caledonia around the chest. Caledonia hit her head again, but Red Tooth's tether held. And when the ship rolled back to center, they hurried the captain below decks.
It could have killed both of them.
She could have killed both of them.
Pisces was right. She'd hesitated, and those seconds had nearly cost everything she had to give. It wasn't like that moment on the beach, but it felt close. She'd flinched, and when she flinched, she lost. But those around her lost even more. Her mother wouldn't have flinched. Rona would have stood firm in her decisions, raced to the helm and steered the ship boldly into the storm. Of course, Rona's ship never would have been crosswise of a storm to begin with. Even when they'd sailed these seas long ago, she kept the Ghost on the right side of the storm. That was the kind of ship she ran. But Caledonia wasn't Rona. It didn't matter who had been at the helm, Their course was determined by the captain. She had let the crew down. Pisces reached over and gave her thigh a friendly slap. Don't mope. Eat. When you're done with that, we're going topside so you can see that we did just fine without you. Because of you. She stood to gather a fresh shirt from the old trunk she'd been sitting on, tossing it on the bed next to Caledonia. You've got maybe 3 days to get your head straight. Going up against Electra is a new game, and we need you steely. This is the finest crew on all the seas, Cala. Believe it. She nodded, careful of her head this time. I do. And I'm sorry. I messed up. She felt herself shrinking, felt the tears warming her eyes. If she couldn't keep her feet during a storm, what made her think she could take on a ship like the Electra? I said, don't mope, Pisces nudged her again. Or, if you're committed, then talk to me. What is there to say? I lost us everything in Cloudbreak. I got us stuck in the Drowning Lands, and now this. How am I supposed to go up there and face everyone again? Pisces was wearing a different kind of frown now, angrier. How about my shoulder? Was that your fault too? Yes. Don't you understand? It's all my fault. Every mistake, every injury, every bad move. They're all my fault because I am the captain of this ship. Just because things didn't go the way you wanted them to doesn't mean you're at fault. Cloudbreak was rough, but I needed a doctor. And you convinced Hesperus, the sly king of Cloudbreak, need I remind you, to not only release us, but give us the map that saved our lives. The Grass Flats was a situation of no good options, and we'd have made it there too if not for the slaggers. And you argued against me. Even you think I made a bad call there. I'm not saying that. North might have been just as bad. Maybe worse. Fighting the gulls a second time could have been disastrous. Then why did you fight me? Because that's my job! Pisces threw her hands down in exasperation. I am your sister, your friend, and your second in command. I stand by your side, and I argue with you because someone has to be brave enough to do it. You made a good choice in a bad situation, and we ended up with full stores and a stronger hull because of it. Because of Hime, Caledonia corrected. That only happened because we had Hime with us. And we had Hime with us because you're the kind of captain that saves lost girls. Spirits, Cala, you've always been so frustratingly myopic. If we didn't win, we lost. If you're not good, you're bad. If it's not day, it's night. It hurt her head to do it, but Caledonia scowled. I fail to see your point. A laugh like a fish leapt from Pisces' mouth. Of course you don't. Listen, we are being chased by the Bullet Fleet. They know our ship. They know your name. We have no good options available. Everyone on the ship knows it. We rely on you to make the best possible choice in whatever situation we find ourselves. And then we follow you. Highs and lows. We follow you. And what happens when I make too many bad choices? When we have too many lows? What do you think? That we're all gonna wake up some morning and leave you because things got hard? Caledonia looked away. It was exactly what she thought. And what she deserved. If Pisces knew the truth about that night on the beach, she'd be the first to leave. Pisces wilted. Cala, she murmured, moving to sit next to her on the bed. We only have bad choices. We trust you, because you always find a way through them. The only mistake you made last night was not trusting your decisions as much as we all do. Caledonia released a long breath. A few tears found their way down her cheeks, and she clenched her jaw in case they had friends. Pisces draped a careful arm around Caledonia's shoulders and let her lean in. The wall Caledonia had worked so hard to maintain, the one she held between her heart and Pisces, didn't feel as solid as it once had. She imagined Pisces sitting on the other side with a chisel and hammer, picking away at a single spot. One day, she would get through. She would learn her single, tremendous secret. And it would be the last day she looked on Caledonia with love in her eyes. But for now, for this moment, it was just the two of them. She wasn't responsible for 53 other lives, and she wasn't hiding a terrible secret. She leaned into her sister's neck and let the tears fall. Chapter 33. Strapping in during a storm was basic. It was different from strapping in before a hard turn in the midst of battle. Those frequently occurred with only a moment's notice. But a storm had to approach. You had time to strap in. Caledonia had certainly had time. And she'd wasted it on doubt, endangering everyone. She felt like a novice. She didn't have time to act like one. Her head throbbed and her steps were unbalanced, but the more she moved, the easier it got. Caledonia had let Pisces pick the worst of the bloody knots from her hair and pull the snarls into a loose braid down her back. Later, she would stand under a stream of hot water and work the tangles loose with oil and a comb. For now, she needed to push through this sluggish melancholy and get in front of her crew. They needed to see that their captain was still on her feet, and that she could own her mistakes. By the time they climbed to the deck, she was almost at full speed. The eyes of the crew fell on her immediately. Curious, concerned, relieved. She did her best to bear it as casually as possible. She nodded, made eye contact, smiled tightly, and kept moving. The ship was cruising freely across restless waters. Blue chop expanded in all directions. It was a sea recently stirred and full of energy. Behind them, and some distance west, the skies hung dark, but here, the sun was powerful behind puffy white clouds. "We broke free of it sometime after midnight," Pisces said, following her gaze. "We don't think it's traveling this way, but Nettle's moving us as though it is."
"Nettle?" Caledonia turned her attention toward the bridge. "You put her at the helm?"
"She put herself there. Again, and just in time, too."
Pisces braced her hands on her hips as she gave Caledonia the rest of the story. How Tin had done her best to keep the ship steady, and how Nettle planted herself at Tin's side and shouted commands like Caledonia herself. Soon, Tin stepped aside and Nettle was the one navigating the steep waves and lashing winds.
"She did good. I doubt Lace could have done better."
The name still stung. Pisces didn't use it lightly, but to show the depth of her approval.
"More trouble than she's worth?" Caledonia asked.
Pisces ran a hand over her head. Her hair was nearly an inch long and falling softly against her forehead.
"Aren't we all?"
"I'll have a talk with her. And with Tin. It's overdue." Caledonia felt the mantle of captain settling more firmly around her shoulders. It hadn't fit well since Lace died. She'd let her discomfort become a distraction. And when she was distracted, the whole ship was off balance. It was time to provide her crew with the firm ground of her decisions again. Continuing their route around the deck, they found Redtooth standing on the mainmast block, her head tipped back to look up. Several feet above her, Orin was balanced along the lower yardarm near the mast, using the foot rope but no harness. Around his waist, he wore a belt of tools. His arms were slicked with sweat and full of the late morning sun.
Could you move any slower? I thought you said bullets were fast.
Red Tooth cupped her hands to be sure he heard her.
Fast and hard, she added, barely containing a laugh at her own joke. I said, Oren paused to give whatever he was working on a sharp crank. We hit our targets.
Another crank.
And yes, we hit them hard. Not in my experience, Red Tooth teased.
Oren's shoulders moved in laughter. He didn't volley back immediately, but bent over his work. On the rear deck, a small cluster of girls sat with a sail spread out between them. They were repairing it. But they sat in full sun to do it, and in full view of the unusual sight of a bullet in the rigging.
Captain!
Red Tooth leapt from her post beneath the buoy, consuming the distance between them in three long steps and wrapping her massive arms around Caledonia before she could protest.
You're here. You're good. Are you good?
I'm good. Caledonia allowed the hug, then gently but firmly pushed Red Tooth back a step.
Thanks to you.
Red Tooth shrugged and looked away.
Anyone would have done it. I'm just glad you're okay.
Sometimes Caledonia was briskly reminded that Red Tooth was a girl just like the rest of them. She was hard and bold and forthright, and she felt so rough that it was easy to think her heart was also those things. In reality, that couldn't be further from the truth. I don't want you risking your life for me again. Clear? I'm grateful, but that was a one-time thing.
Red Tooth regarded Caledonia with amused disbelief.
Sorry to disagree, Captain, but that's not something I can promise. If I see you're in trouble, I'm going to do something about it. That's just the way it is.
Red, Caledonia started, but was cut off when Red Tooth gently grabbed her face in her rough hands.
Ducking her head to look straight into Caledonia's eyes, she repeated,
That's just the way it is.
Before Caledonia could respond, Red Tooth pulled her close and pressed a quick kiss against her mouth. This time, Caledonia's smile won out, and she pressed her palms to her sister's sunburned cheeks.
Got it! Oren shouted from above. Sails back in its gear and ready to come down.
He'd moved from the foot rope along the yardarm to the tines along the mast.
Like me.
Why isn't he in a harness? Pisces asked, scrutinizing Oren's situation, 12 feet up and loaded down with tools. We have plenty.
Red Tooth grinned, conspiratorial.
Yeah, and they're all made for girls.
You're not saying he believed that?
Pisces sounded like she couldn't decide if she was amused or horrified.
The grin on Red Tooth's face grew. She squinted up at Oren as though considering the question.
I like him, she answered resolutely.
Red, Caledonia warned, get him down.
Yes, Captain.
He didn't need much help. Red Tooth stood beneath to offer guidance, but mostly ended up teasing him about his grip. Oren laughed easily with her, letting the jabs land and throwing a few of his own. Whatever had transpired between them in the hours since Caledonia's injury had been significant enough to win the smallest amount of Red Tooth's trust. He hopped to the ground at Red Tooth's feet.
You wanted the gear snapped in, right?
No chance for movement. Alarm showed on Red Tooth's face.
Snapped in? No, I didn't want it snapped in.
Her teeth crashed together.
You're joking. You're a damn dirty bullet, and you're joking.
I am, Oren confirmed, satisfaction bright in his eyes. He was sun-drenched and in the full blush of health for once. The tone of his brown skin was even instead of blotchy or fever pale. He'd bathed and washed his clothes, and even his wrists were free of their bandages and less violently red. Pisces hadn't moved, but her attention landed on the bullet like a ray of light.
You know any of those harnesses would have fit you just fine, right?
I know. Oren's smile was easy, his tone light. But you always trust your clip.
Red Tooth's smile returned at that, clearly pleased that he'd taken her challenge and run with it. Crew, Caledonia corrected. There's no clip here.
Right, crew, he said. My mistake. I'm glad to see you on your feet.
Don't get sentimental, she fired back.
He laughed. That's what you call sentiment?
He shook his head in disbelief, then heaved a sigh and raised his hands.
I assume my time in the sun has come to an end.
The answer was yes. She should be standing here to bind him and return him to the hold like the unwelcome guest he was. Except, he wasn't as unwelcome as he'd been only 2 weeks ago. He'd given good information. He'd survived his withdrawal. And when she hadn't been looking, her crew had folded him into their patterns. She could remove him from it, lock him away until she needed him again. Or she could lock him into the routine. The fight ahead of them was filled with unknowns. He was their single biggest asset, their single greatest advantage. If she didn't demonstrate even the barest amounts of trust in him, how could she expect her crew to do the same? If they were going to risk their lives taking on the Electra, they needed to know they were doing so with good cause and good information. Caledonia regarded the boy before her. Once a bullet. Once a five son. What would he be next? Friend or traitor? As she stood there on the deck of her ship with a brisk wind at her back, she realized there was only one way to find out. She placed a hand on his wrists and pushed them firmly down. Don't make me regret this, she said. Caledonia Styx, Orin said, his smile as vibrant as the noon sun. I suspect your regrets are few and legendary. He didn't know how right he was.
Chapter 34. On the wall of the bathroom that wasn't reserved for Caledonia, but was treated that way regardless, hung a mirror. The seamless, silvered surface was made of the same self-repairing polymer that made up every glass pane and window on the ship. It could break, but within moments, the splinter would knit itself back together. More than once, Caledonia had studied the unmarred surface with a sense of wonder. The old world had been so skilled at making unbreakable things, and yet they'd failed to keep themselves whole. They'd left behind tools and weapons and half-stories and a desperate legacy. Rona had once said that the history of their predecessors was a living creature they'd be running from their whole lives. History was a disease they weren't equipped to fight. She thought if they could escape its reach, they could make their own history. One that wouldn't harm or chase or infect anyone else. Caledonia felt like she'd been running from her own history for 4 long years. But 2 weeks ago, she'd turned around. She was in pursuit, and with every minute, they drew closer to the ship that carried their brothers. Every mile that swept along their hull was one less mile she'd have to run. Maybe it was running from the beast of history that gave it power. Maybe, just maybe, if she could win their brothers back, she'd feel like she could stop running from her past. And maybe, when that was done, she'd find the courage to tell her friend the truth. Caledonia studied Pisces' face in the mirror before her. She sat on a low stool with her chin tipped up, all the angles of her jaw, nose, and cheeks looking harsh in the blue wash of cabin lighting. On her chest, the green seedling inside Ares' glass charm seemed more alive than usual. Pisces waited, one eyebrow lifting when Caledonia paused for just a moment too long. Shaking away her thoughts, Caledonia wet the razor in her hand and pressed her fingers to Pisces' throat,
tipping her head back even more. Then she pulled the razor steadily across Pisces' scalp. As the feathers of black hair scattered around them on the floor, Caledonia was struck by how similar this moment was to the first time she'd cut her friend's hair. Those tresses had been much longer, and Pisces' expressions less bold. But it marked their loss in a way neither of them had expected. Just as this moment marked something else. "Will you grow it again? When we have them back?" Caledonia asked when she finished moving around the delicate skin of Pisces' ear. Pisces pressed a few pieces of shorn hair between her fingers. Their eyes met briefly in the mirror.
"I don't think so."
"Why not?" Moving on the other side, Caledonia pulled the razor from the crown of Pisces' head to the center, wiping the blade on the towel over her shoulder to clean it before repeating the gesture.
"You loved it long."
"I did, but..." Pisces dropped the hair and looked up.
"Kala, have you thought about how different they're going to be?"
"Of course." Caledonia tried to sound matter-of-fact and unconcerned. "What does this have to do with your hair?"
"Nothing, really."
Pisces was quiet for a moment as she reconsidered her approach.
"They won't be the same. I don't think there's any way they can be."
"I know." Caledonia's response was short, but Pisces was determined to continue.
"It's just, we're not the same either. I don't think I'll ever be the same girl I was that night on the gem. Maybe it sounds strange, but my hair was sort of wrapped up in that girl. And I don't think I can go back to that, even though I loved it."
She waited for Caledonia to swipe the last of her hair from her head, then turned in her seat.
"And we won't be able to make them who they were either."
The metal in her hand felt hot. In spite of the frost blooming on the round porthole, the room was suddenly too warm. She forced herself to answer calmly.
"I know they'll be different. But they'll come back to us. I know they will. You said yourself, if Orin can change, so can they."
"I know." Pisces stood and took the razor from Caledonia's hand.
"We just have to be ready to let them discover who they want to be when given the chance."
Perhaps Pisces' caution was prescient. Caledonia hated to think what 4 long years had done to Donnelly's gentle nature.
And what if Ares didn't want to come back to them at all? It was too terrible a thought to voice.
She didn't want to burden Pisces with the same grim thoughts that haunted her. So instead, she smiled and said, "After we forced them off that ship and through detox, of course."
"Of course," Pisces answered, cheered.
"Force first, choice later." It was an uneasy thought, but there was no other way. When they found their brothers, they'd be indoctrinated and drugged. While it was tempting to imagine winning them back would be easy, recovering their minds could prove to be even more challenging than saving them in the first place. Caledonia tried to brace herself for both options, but in her heart she knew it was more likely to be the latter. If it had been her, if she'd been the one stolen from the ship and forced into a violent way of life, she wasn't sure she'd have survived. But she'd never tasted silt, and there was no way to know how that one thing might have changed her.
"It's just..." Pisces said, catching Caledonia before they parted ways in the hall. "It's just that I'm worried."
"And you don't seem worried."
"I am," Caledonia admitted.
She imagined herself like the mirror on the wall, a single crack splitting her face in two before melting together once more. But not about them. For 2 days, the Mors Navis traveled steadily north, pausing only in the thick of night to reserve power and let the engines rest. The storm had stolen nearly a full day and night from them, and now they raced to reach the North Water ahead of the Electra. The air gathered a constant chill,
and the waters were full of bite. None of them was used to this kind of cold, and soon they'd raided their stores for every sweater, wool coat, and set of gloves they could find. They had enough for nearly everyone, and the remainder set to work in the galleys stitching warmth together from various pieces of clothing and unused blankets. Pisces, stubborn, anxious, and probably dying a little from being so long above the surface, used their midnight stops to get herself back in the water. Redtooth stood watch with her new friend Orin by her side. Caledonia could never tell which of them was more ready to leap in after Pisces at the first sign of distress. Even covered in the thickest wetsuit they had on ship, Pisces emerged with a purple tinge to her lips and clattering teeth beneath a strangely refreshed smile. When a blue-gray coast appeared in the north, it was midday on their second full day since the storm. The land tumbled toward the ocean like pebbles tossed down a hill. Uneven ridges climbed sweeping valleys lined with the smallest racing rivers. The shoreline was jagged and temperamental, sometimes curving smoothly along, and sometimes diving sharply in or outward. It created coves and peninsulas of all sizes. Perfect hiding places for a ship to lie in wait. The colonies were a scattering of towns and villages across the area. Given how frequently the land shifted, they were known to move. Once, they'd done so aggressively, always seeking to outsmart Arik's men. Now, when they abandoned one site and chose another, they were required to report the location or risk egregious consequences. Like everyone else in and around the Bullet Seas, they were a subdued people, and once a year, they were stripped of many of their children. At the helm, Nettle kept a good distance from the shore and drove forward at an even pace. Caledonia's conversation with the girl had been easy enough. She'd already proven herself capable and had asked for the responsibility, and Caledonia was ready to give it to her. Nettle was no longer on probation, but their helm girl. Her conversation with Tin, however, landed hard. It was Caledonia's fault. Instead of moving forward and assigning Lace's work to other girls, she'd let Tin try to fill her myriad roles for far too long. And while she was well-suited to one, letting her try to do both was rough on her and the crew. Tin had blinked hard when Caledonia made her operations. "Just operations?" she'd asked, her blue eyes narrowing. "And you're making the stowaway helm?" "Yes," Caledonia had responded without flinching. "Nettle is helm. You are operations. I need you in your best element. Clear?" To Tin, this was a stripping of her power, and it showed in the clench of her jaw. "Clear," she answered darkly. Then she balled her fists and rallied. It was the kind of gesture Caledonia had come to associate with her whole crew. They were grit and determination, a kind of raw battle cry born of the extraordinary tangle of despair and desire they were built from. And when they finally found the Electra, it was that cry that would win their brothers. But knowing where the colonies were likely to be wasn't enough. They needed a location, and it needed to be specific. It took several hours for Orin to get his bearings. He sat on the command deck with Caledonia, wrapped in a coat of burnished red wool, shoulders hunched against the wind. Beside him was a cup of cold teco and an empty plate, and he alternated between peering through binoculars and making notations on a small piece of paper. Finally satisfied, he relinquished the binoculars to Caledonia. "There's a cove just around that bend. That's the farthest colony, where Electra will start gathering." Caledonia lifted the binoculars to her eyes and focused on the protrusion of land. "You're sure?" "As sure as I can be." The wind pushed through his hair, whipping it across his eyes and ears. "But I haven't been a Five Sun in months, and they don't tell bullets much at all. Things might have changed. I doubt it, but it's possible."
It had been nearly 3 weeks since Orin told her about this run, since they'd brought him aboard. If he'd said something like this back then, she'd have dismissed it offhand, suspected him of leading her off course. Today, none of that doubt colored her thoughts. If he was right, they had only a day before the Electra came into view. Alternatively, it might already be anchored around the next bend, raiding the colony for children.
"Understood. Nettle, get us into this cove," Caledonia called, climbing to her feet and gesturing to the one next to Orin's mark.
The ship rumbled immediately, and Caledonia turned her steps toward the main deck.
"Red, get ready!"
Redtooth whistled to her team in response, and the crew sprang to action. Leaving the deck, Caledonia raced down the companionway ladder, ducking to avoid the pipes. She hurried through the corridors to level 3, where Amina and Hime were locked away in the room they'd claimed as their lab. It was directly beneath the bridge and forward from the cargo bay, a room the size of several bunk rooms combined, with lockers and secured cubbies along the walls that were perfect for cataloging and storing tech, most of which was now spread across the floor. There were wires and panels and charges of every shape and size. The walls were covered in drawings, each held in place with magnets, some of which were as large as the paper they held. It looked like chaos to Caledonia, but the two girls fit neatly into the metal tapestry around them. They found what they needed instantly, parts and pieces passing between their hands as naturally as if they shared a meal. If Caledonia watched them instead of focusing on the mess around them, the pattern of chaos suddenly looked like a logical dance. It was beautiful. It was exciting.
"Amina, tell me we're ready."
She didn't answer right away. She stood, crossing to the opposite side of her work with long, careful steps. Her braids had been collected into a single larger braid down her back and tied off with a familiar blue ribbon, and her brown cheek was smudged with black grease. Hime crouched off to the side, her apron puddling on the floor at her feet, hands resting atop her knees. Each of her fingers bore some sign of the work they'd been doing, pricked or sliced or peeling. After a moment, Amina looked up.
"We're ready."
Ready.
They were ready. They were in the right place. They had the right weapon.
Now, all they needed was a target. Chapter 35. Caledonia crouched in the front of the bowboat, her eyes pinned to the rocky outline between them and the cove. She felt certain that just behind that bend, the Electra spliced through water. She felt it like a vibration in the ocean, and her blood reached for the fight. In order to run silently, the bowboat had to run slowly. And in order to scout unseen, they'd have to moor the boat and hike over the hill on foot for the best vantage point. Redtooth sat at the tiller, guiding them smoothly toward the shore, and Orin sat in the middle, feet braced against the gentle bounce of the boat. A small team, but the work ahead didn't require anything more. Under normal circumstances, Redtooth would have taken her usual team to scout for the Electra. As it was, Caledonia wanted Orin's eyes on the ship before they moved in to attack. And where Orin went, she also went. The shore was braided with driftwood in all directions, creating a barrier between them and the hill beyond. Redtooth nudged them as close as they could get, but there was no getting to shore without also getting wet. One after another, they leapt over the side of the boat, the bracing water reaching above their knees. Redtooth released a strangled curse.
"Now I know Pi is part fish. How the hell does she do this? No, I take that back. I want to know why she does this."
"Peace of mind," Caledonia answered, grateful for the distraction from her freezing flesh.
"That girl has a strange notion of peace," Orin added,
joining Caledonia at the back of the boat where they could push while Redtooth pulled from the prow. They maneuvered the boat over the bleached stacks of wood to the beach, and soon it was secured enough to leave behind. The three of them squeezed frigid water from their clothes, pulled their jackets tighter, and began to pick their way up the steep hillside. The ground was peppered with rocks covered in a slick moss, making the climb a challenging one. They slipped and scrabbled over the uneven surface, winning fresh bruises on their knees and shins. By the time they reached the top, they'd all broken a sweat and were breathing hard. They moved quickly, settling behind a crop of boulders which offered mild protection from the cold wind and a good view of the water. The cove on the other side of the hill was much like the one they'd come from. Only this one was empty. Caledonia felt dread sink through her stomach. What if Orin was wrong? What if this was the wrong cove? But then Orin pointed. "There," he said. Smoke rose in hazy streams from the trees a half mile inland. The colonists were near, anticipating the same ship they now waited for. "Maybe they won't lose their children today," Caledonia said. "It won't stop them." Orin turned on his back, shoulders braced against the cold stone. "They'll lose their children one way or another." This was the way of the world. It had been the way of it for Caledonia's entire life. But hearing it now dug a trench of sadness she hadn't expected. She turned her eyes to the trails of smoke and imagined families gathered around each one, holding their boys and girls close for the very last time.
"What would it take to stop him?"
Redtooth surprised Caledonia with her question. "You were a bullet. Not good for much, if you ask me. But you must have some idea." Orin almost smiled. "Destroying the Agra fleet is a good tactic, honestly, but you'll never do it on your own."
"How many ships do we need? 5? 10?
Redtooth pressed, her mind fully engaged. "A fleet," Orin answered, somber. "You need a fleet." Redtooth slumped, scowling at Caledonia for a long minute. "Red," Caledonia said when that minute went too long. "Speak or avert your frown."
"You need a fleet," Redtooth said matter-of-factly. "If anyone can command a fleet, it's you."
"You're dreaming." Caledonia turned her eyes back to the mouth of the cove. "I'm not saying you shouldn't dream, but maybe set your sights somewhere more reasonable."
"You mean somewhere like taking down a ship with an electrified hull?"
Redtooth nodded.
"Good advice."
Caledonia scowled.
"She's right," Orin said from beside her. "If anyone could lead a fleet, it's you."
In spite of the cold, Caledonia felt a small warmth bloom in her chest. Redtooth groaned.
"Things have gone very wrong when a bullet agrees with you. Quick, say something terrible. Shouldn't be hard. Just open your mouth." "Red, you're faithful and strong, and if I die tomorrow, I hope you remember I considered you a friend," Orin said brightly.
"If you don't die tomorrow, just find me the next day,"
Redtooth responded, but she didn't even try to smother her smile this time.
"I'll take care of you."
Orin offered some response, but Caledonia didn't hear the words. Her gaze moved as though drawn to a point on the ocean. The wind that stung her cheeks suddenly filled with an electric hum. She felt it in her skin, tasted it on her tongue, and in the next moment, she appeared. The Electra sailed around the peninsula like a harpoon. Blue-white lightning crackled along her hull where the ship met the ocean. It sizzled and snapped, flashing unnaturally bright in defiance of the daylight. There was no ghost funnel mounted on her bow. Instead, an old hollow projected orange numbers into the dimming sky. A countdown to the moment they would come ashore and take the colonists' children. The ship
was a nightmare coming to call. And it was the cage that held Donnelly and Ares prisoner.
"She's here," Caledonia said, raising the telephone.